Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Money Mitch Effect. This is a sports podcast that dives into the weeds on all your favorite athletic topics. We're focusing on hockey and combat sports today. I'm your host, Mitch Michaels. Delighted to have you with me. Big show, as I mentioned, Stanley Cup playoffs are here. Joe Crisali calls in to discuss his Rangers winning the President's Trophy, the Islanders Hurricane Series, the Battle of Florida, Lightning, and Panthers. Will the Leafs break through? Will the Bruins bounce back? It's Oilers Kings round three. The Dallas Stars pacing it out in the West, along with the Vancouver Canucks. But will there be some upsets? We're going to dive into everything from the Stanley Cup playoffs, as well as talk regular season hockey, dish out our awards, and some predictions as well. And then I talked to MMA Fighting's Jose Youngs, who's on site at virtually every big UFC ticket. He was in the building for 300. It was remarkable to see what happened in the BMF title fight. My goodness, with Gaethje and Holloway, Mad Max doing it again. Plus, Max Holloway wins that fight. Pereira's unstoppable. We've got some fight announcements. McGregor is back to face Chandler in a little bit. We dive into that, some boxing, some WWE WrestleMania talk as well. It's Joe Crisali followed by Jose Youngs. This is the Money Mitch Effect. Let's start the show. All right, now joining us here on the Money Mitch Effect. Favorite time of the year, bar none, hockey playoffs starting a day away. Got Joe Crisali coming in. Joe's feeling the vibes because his team won the President's Trophy. But this is really a great time of the year, Joe. Welcome in for the show. And can't beat the Stanley Cup playoffs. I know you're going to have a nerve-wracking experience, but this is really just the best.
Yeah, with the Rangers winning that President's Trophy, it's hard for me to not just be like, all right, we're going to cakewalk through and make it to the Stanley Cup final. I haven't seen the Rangers team this good since they went and faced the Kings in the Cup, which they lost. But they have a tough road ahead of them. Maybe not this first round, but, you know, going against Carolina and probably Florida making it through there. They got some juggernauts they got to get through to get to the promised land.
Yeah, a couple
from that Eastern Conference.
Couple things I wanted to get to first, just putting a bookend on the regular season. You mentioned the Rangers getting the President's Trophy. It's always amazing to me, though, seeing the team's jockey. I'm not going to say anyone takes a dive, but we were saying, like, we're recording this Friday morning, how it seemed like neither Vegas or the Kings wanted to play Edmonton. They're both kind of going the other direction yesterday. It is going to be Kings Edmonton, but you saw it a little bit with Boston, you know, maybe going down behind Florida so they can play Toronto. So I always am amazed by the jockeying of positions.
Yeah, we talked about there's like a tale of two cities. You got some teams that are just ripping through April, the last stretch of their schedule. The Jets won every single game through April, and then you got other teams that are just trying to lose to go against certain teams. I don't like that in terms of, you know, you're going to the playoffs. You got to beat the teams that are going to be there if you want to get to the final. You know, you want to prove that you're the best team in the league. You got to beat the best teams in the league. So when you're trying to play for positioning to go up against a team that you think is weaker or that you match up better against, I just don't like that.
Yeah.
Because then you're not confident. You're like, all right, our best path is if we play this team, not if we play this team. But your best path is to go into the playoffs and just win. That's just how it has to be.
I know. It really is. And if we look at the teams before we get to the series, and I do want to touch on the regular season and get your thoughts on, you know, the award or who might be claiming hardware. But if we look at the teams that got in, I know our predictions, we were always just shooting darts beginning, but if you look at like halfway through the season, the teams that made it, and we're looking at, you know, the expected teams, like your Rangers, Florida, Boston, even Toronto, and Tampa that, you know, just has that heart. But, you know, the Islanders making that push, Joe, was pretty impressive. They fire their coach, Patrick Waugh, comes in, they find a way to get in. They've looked pretty good. I can't believe the Capitals got in. And I know Detroit was fun, and those games down the stretch were exciting, and maybe that would have been a more interesting series against your Rangers, but you got to give credit to the Capitals. I don't understand how it happened, but they're into the playoffs.
It doesn't make any sense, dude. What are they? They only had two players score over 40 points on their entire roster. So you look at a team like that and you're like, how are they even in the playoffs?
Look at goal differential. Just to interrupt you, goal differential, minus 37.
Yeah, in the playoffs, minus 37. I mean, to be honest, though, the Rangers, they were only plus one in goal differential on 5-on-5. So,
yeah.
But Washington in, I mean, it's not exciting. Most NHL fans, I'm sure, would have loved to see a new team in like Detroit, a young
and you saw those games, right, how Detroit ended the season, how fun that was?
Yeah, like, they're a fun team to watch.
Hockey town. It was good to see those fans actually invested again. You know, we kind of took that for granted. You know, they made the playoffs all those years. In the West, I mean, Nashville was, how about a, I love it. I've talked about it a few times on the show, but Barry Trotz, you know, they're going to go see U2 at the Spear the day before they play Vegas. They lay an egg at home. He's like, nope, this is canceled. And then they go and just basically go unbeatable down the stretch to storm into the playoffs. That's the one team, looking at who got in, especially where we were halfway through. Everybody else was kind of in that position, Joe, but Nashville storming to get a playoff spot was insane.
Well, Nashville, they just got a good top two caliber players. Forsberg, you know, he had a really tough year last year, but he came back this year and he just dominated. 48 goals, 94 points. And then Josi.
He's amazing.
To me, outside of Makar, I think Josi's got to be number one.
He's the most. He's the most. Well, okay. So, I'm not going to let you not throw Quinn Hughes in there. you got to add him. But no, those are all great defensemen, obviously. I think you could argue, with all due respect to all those names, that Josi is the most well-rounded. Makar's the best skater. Fox and Hughes are a little more dynamic in the offensive zone, but Yossi's still good there and defensively is solid. I think if you're going to give me the question of who's the most well-rounded defenseman, I'd say Roman Josi.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I've always been a fan of his, so I actually got to see him play up here. They played the Kraken, and he looked great, so
yeah,
I'm about it. I've always liked Roman Josi, and the defensive pairings on Nashville are a little more solid, I think, than what they're going up against.
Yeah, and before we get to the playoff previews for all these series, just quickly for awards, you have a lean on this. So it looks like Hughes probably to win the Norris. Do we agree there? Seems like it's Quinn Hughes' year. Okay.
Yeah, without him, I mean, you take him off the Canucks, what happens?
Exactly. Top team, like you got it, you know, won the division. I think it's, he led all, you know, defensemen in points there. Okay, so there's that. Goalie, I think we were talking before, Hellebuck. You got to say he gets the Vezina this
year. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right behind him in the odds is Bob. But, you know, I think Solar's had a better year than Bob. So I'm going to go with Helly there.
Freaking obviously. Bob. I also love, you'll appreciate this. It's amazing how Panarin just loves scoring on Russian goalies. he just owns every Russian goal he faces. It's great. Rookie of the year is contentious, right? There's pretty much two choices. Are you going to go with Connor Bedard, who had the most stats, missed some time, but looked like, you know, an unreal player, you know, or do you go with the hockey analytical guy? Do you go with Brock Faber, who meant so much to that Minnesota team?
I mean, it's hard to go against Bedard, you know, and it's one of those things where he's got the media eye. Everybody knows his name. And he had a decent enough season, even though he missed some time. But no one else really stood out for me, at least towards the end of the season. So a lot of those dudes didn't get called up till later.
I know. And Luke Hughes was all right. Obviously, Logan Cooley did well. Matthew Nyes. But I just favor what he meant to that back end. I mean, if you're Minnesota, I know you missed the playoffs this year, but you struck gold. You got a workhorse. You got a number one defenseman who's on that rookie deal. So.
Yeah, it's tough to go against him. I do like Faber, like you said, Hughes. Logan Cooley, to an extent, had a really good season, but, you know, he's not going to be playing in Arizona anymore.
No, I know. That's a tragic one, too. And then lastly, MVP. This is the craziest MVP race that I can imagine because, look, for all these players, I mean, who even is the finalist is up for debate. Will Austin Matthews get left off the final ballot with 69 goals? Panarin had a career year, 120 points. It looks like the final three, Joe, are going to be Kucherov with the Art Ross Trophy, 144 points. MacKinnon, 140. McDavid, 132, missing some time. I mean, this is as insane of an offensive rush for the MVP as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking strictly at odds, MacKinnon's the heavy favorite, but I don't know how you overlook a 144-point season from Kucherov. That just is unheard of, especially on a team that didn't play so well throughout the entire year. And, I mean, I like Kucherov out of those. It's hard to overlook Matthews, 69 goals, but I think he's definitely going to get overlooked.
I mean, I'm on record as not being a fan of Kucherov, but how could you hate that? I mean, and we had Kucherov and McDavid go for 100 assists in a season.
100.
Only guys that have ever done that are Gretzky and Lemieux. And got to add the caveat just for people that don't realize how good Wayne was, 100 assists, 11 straight years.
Yeah. And this is one of those seasons, too, where you know, Panarin really came into his own for the Rangers, and I don't even think he's going to be considered for this trophy with points, which is fine. But from a Ranger fan standpoint, I mean, over the last few years having him, I'm like, man, when is this guy going to be the guy?
He is, yeah.
Bonus did it this year. So, you know, if, even if he's not considered for that trophy, he's won the Rangers fans over at this point.
He certainly is. Well, let's get to the playoff previews. We can start with your series. And I know the Rangers are playing the Capitals, Joe. I don't know if you remember this, but we're coming up on 9 years since we caught an overtime game seven when you used to live out in Los Angeles, Rangers Capitals.
Oh, we're gonna backtrack to that. That was a different Capitals team.
I know it was. It certainly was. And you mentioned the road, and I think the first round obviously favors into the Rangers' hands. They're -225 to win the series. Capitals were the team that just got in here. I know that this has been a dream season in a lot of ways for the Rangers, Joe, but any concern with, you know, some of the hockey analytics, the nerd side of things, say maybe this Ranger team isn't as invincible as it seems?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some concern. There's also that talk about, like, you know, you win the President's Trophy and bad things happen. I mean, look what happened to Boston last year. Mm-hmm. But I find it so hard to believe that this Washington team with dudes that can't score are going to beat this Rangers team. This is one of the best Rangers teams I've seen. They have so much depth. They're just solid throughout.
Like, how much more nervous would you be if this was Pittsburgh, honestly?
Yeah, I'd probably a little bit more nervous. Yeah. If it was Detroit, honestly, I'd be a little bit more nervous. They played the Rangers pretty well this season. So, you know, but the Rangers are just, they do everything well. They're not number one in everything, but they're top 10 in everything. Their power play and penalty kill have been incredible this year. That's one way that they've kind of gotten after it, is their special teams has gotten a lot better. They can score. They have great goaltending. They just get it done. And like I said, they're solid from top to bottom. Yep. And they grit and they grind. I know they had that call up, Matt Rempe coming in, fighting everybody for that short little stretch when they had that big brawl with the Devils. They just seem like a team that has meshed well all year, and they've been playing together for a couple of years. And they're getting what they need out of everybody so far. Even the young guys have stepped up. And they've had to shuffle the lines a lot throughout the season, but I think they've got the combinations that work right now. And so, I like what they're doing.
Yeah. Couple of quick things though. The only real chance that the Capitals have is if Charlie Lindgren plays out of his mind. He played well down the stretch. He's going up against his brother Ryan, which is a funny subplot too. Two brothers facing off. I don't know. And Rempe is one.
He'll score.
Ryan
will score.
What, he'll score?
Ryan's going to score on him for sure.
See if their mom lets that happen or their parents let that happen. But I definitely think that the Rempe part of this is. They'll never admit it, but definitely Laviolette talked to him and said, hey, tune down the fighting. Like, fight if you have to, but don't fight every game.
Yeah,
I don't know how much he's going to actually play in this series, because the trades you made, like my guy Roslovic, like, the Rangers are so deep that I don't even know if they need him dressing in this series, you know, given that fighting comes out.
I'm just talking in terms of, like, an energy standpoint. You know, if he's not playing, it's fine. But throughout the season, they got a little bit of spark plug from some of these younger guys coming in and getting stuff done. Like Will Cooley, he was awesome throughout the year. I think he's best season of his career. And they got some bruisers. They got some guys that just get it done.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Rangers to win. I think this could go, it could be a sweep. I hate predicting sweeps, but I'll say five, just given the fact that, you know, playoffs, interesting thing can things can happen. That said, the other Metro series, Hurricanes Islanders, Joe, I was shocked to see the pricing on this, that the Carolina Hurricanes are a bigger favorite, -230, than the Rangers are. I think the Islanders can win this series. I'm not necessarily picking them, but the Islanders have been a different team since Watt took over. And in one way that they've been different is their transition game. They're way more exciting and I'd say less boring than they've been. I like what Carolina's done. The Gensel addition has been huge, but I'm expecting a competitive series. Upsets happen. This isn't the NBA playoffs where you can just basically go chalk for the first couple rounds.
Yeah, like, you know, everyone's kind of overlooking the Islanders, and I mean, every point you made is totally valid. And look at how they finished April. They only lost one game, and they beat They beat the Rangers. They beat Nashville.
They gave you guys game after game, too. All those Rangers games with Waugh as the Islanders coach were close, you know?
Yeah. I think it'll be a close series. I still think Carolina is going to be too powerful for them to get through. Like you said, they've been a completely different team since they got Gensel. And he's kind of helped change Aho's game. He's kind of stepped it up a little bit since they've kind of been out there. So, I mean, I like Carolina in that series for sure.
We'll see if we got some upsets out of you, because there's going to be one that happens, right? We know at least one or more are going to happen. And maybe it's going to be, maybe, Joe, it's going to be in the Battle of Florida yet again, the Panthers and the Lightning. And it's funny that the last time this happened, you know, Florida gets swept. They were the top seed, but they were kind of exposed as a little fraudulent. Roles have changed, but Tampa Bay Lightning, Joe, I just want to mention on them, they're the epitome in sports, that cliche of heart of a champion. We're just expecting them to roll over and be old. You just can't overestimate how good coaching and veteran championship players. Obviously, Kucherov helps, but this is a championship culture, and you know they're back again in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know you can't always count against Tampa Bay, but I just they're just not the same team. But you can't overlook a team that had what 98 points. Yeah, I mean 98 points coming out of the wild card. But Florida, the Panthers are. I just don't see them losing in this first round. And
they hit a dip, though. I mean, the one thing about the Panthers, and this happens in the season, right? They hit a little bit of a dip in the last month, but some would say, Boston Bruins fans last year would say, hey, that's probably a good thing. Get some of those, you know, get some of that rust out of the way before the playoffs, because you've got to face some adversity or you're not used to it.
Yeah. I mean, but that the Bennett Kachuk line, I don't know how they stop them. And I like, their goaltending kind of matches up similarly. Vasilevskiy's over the course of the last, like, what 4 or 5 years has been, like, one of the best goalies in the league. But
yes, that's fair.
It's just hard to go against Florida when they've been playing this well all season long, and you're, you know, it's just hard to pick against the number one team that's in there right now. And Tampa Bay's got a couple injuries that they got to get over. I know they grabbed Anthony Duclair, who's been on fire for them since they got him, but you know, not having Sergachev, I'm not sure how that holds up for them.
Yeah, I was looking too. I mean, if you want to say another, the Tampa Bay reasoning for how they'd have a chance to win this series is simple. It's Vasilevskiy plays elite. They had the best power play in the league statistically. If that thing's buzzing and they can keep Ford out and frustrate them, they've got a chance. And obviously, we haven't even talked about how health is going to matter a lot. All it takes is one injury. Like last year in the final, Matthew Tkachuk breaking his sternum, trying to play through it. But I do think that how the depth is, trading for Tarasenko, adding depth on Florida is going to make them better off. And they're built for it, especially, you know, given how they've made the acquisitions and gone for it. So I think we're both
I totally agree. I just think Tampa Bay, you know, we look at them as always a Stanley Cup contending team. And they've had pretty much the same little jostling of players over the last couple of years, but at some point, you know, like these guys get older and they're just not as good as they were. I mean, Hedman was awesome for most of this season, and the last previous season, but if he's not producing at that caliber level where he's like viewed as one of the top defensemen in the league, and if Vasilevskiy is not standing on his head, I mean, look at Stamkos. He had one of the worst seasons of his career in plus minus. He just was kind of a liability out there on defense. And as a top line or second line guy, I'm not sure exactly sure where they have him right now. That's not something that you're going to overcome against a team like Florida, especially when you have to go against Tkachuk and, you know, the firepower that they have on that roster.
And that's another argument for why Kucherov should win MVP, because he had 144 points. Point was 90. So there's a 54-point difference.
Yeah, for real.
It's pretty crazy. But do you think it's going to be more of the same in the last Eastern series of history, or are we going to see the Leafs finally break through against the Bruins? Slight underdog is Toronto.
They are literally polar opposites. So you look at these two teams and you're like, do I like a team that can score goals, or do I like a team that plays defense and stops goals from happening?
Yeah, second most goals in the league for Toronto. We know what they do. We know how they play. We also know their vulnerability is on the back end. And I would argue that the matchup, this is kind of, there's a reason why Boston did what they did to kind of angle for this series. I think they match up pretty well. I mean, the last couple of times they played in the regular season, I'm pretty sure Boston, you know, handled business. Goaltending and what they do with that, you know, twosome is always interesting. But look, everybody's job's on the line. I mean, Keefe's fired if they don't win, obviously. That's the easiest question there is. And I haven't been really thrilled that he said Matthews going for 70 goals was a distraction. It's like, what, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you. What do you want him to score less? Yeah. So you take away some of those goals, you got to play some defense. I mean, that's the problem with the Maple Leafs. You know, they have quality. They have two quality top guys, Riley and McKay. But, you know, TJ Brody, last season, not great. His decline has been rough. And their goaltending is a total question mark. I don't trust Wall. I don't trust Samsonov. But they are getting extra scoring. So that's the thing, is they built this team to just score goals. They brought in Bertuzzi, McMahon. Everybody is starting to put the pucks in the net, but you know, their D is just really bad. It's just been really bad all season, and you got to think a team like Boston with some elite scoring, with Pasternak and Marchand, they're going to be able to score at the same rate as Toronto.
I know.
Because of how well Boston is in net. They have two star quality goaltenders.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot to be said, right? Like, Pasternak's another guy that we didn't mention him because of how great the stats were, but you forget how good he is and how much of a sniper he is. Every year, he's at the top of the goal leads. And then you got to remember, too, I want to bring this up before we get to the West, just the stats and how sometimes there could be misleading. Like, the Bruins and Islanders played 26 overtime games this year. So it's like we're looking at teams that got these points, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they got the overtime point, which helped their stats. Toronto was a team that was up there too. So these teams are used to playing close games, but Joe, I'm with you in the sense that Toronto is going to have to change up their style if they want to win. I'm not sure they're capable of winning a bunch of 2-1 games, because that's what it takes. I mean, you've seen it. We saw Tampa with their high flying offense here. They won back to back. They beat the Islanders 1-0 in a game 7 in the Eastern Conference final.
Yeah. I mean, and also if you look at these two rosters, right? Like, Who's deeper? Who's got the deeper lineup? Who has played well? They both are pretty shallow if you think about it. I mean, you take Pasternak and Marchand out of the picture. Who are you looking at as their top scorers for Boston? Zacha, Heinen also on the top line. I mean, Zacha had a great year. He played really well down the stretch, but you know, I necessarily don't trust them to score at the same rate as Toronto, but I can't get over how bad their defense was this year. I just don't trust it at all, and their goaltending was horrible. You know, and your coach coming out and saying your best player is scoring and being elite was such a distraction. That's just such a negative look as we go into the playoffs.
Maybe it's freeing for him. There's no doubt, right? He knows he's fired if he doesn't win. So it's like, hey, don't even have to think about it. It's just, it's going to happen or it's not.
He's already set the base. He set the stone where he's like, all right, I'm going to start etching my layoff in here and this stone.
Yeah. Other important things to note going into the Western Conference, I just want to point out power play penalty kill. Best penalty kill right now in the regular season percent-wise was Carolina, followed by the Kings and the Rangers. Worst penalty kill, the New York Islanders. So another advanced statistic, but we know things change. So Western Conference talk with Joe Crisale here on the Money Mitch Effect, looking at these playoff series. I'll get that Kings Oilers out of the way, because I'm not optimistic here, Joe, that the Kings will change it. This is a very much closer price series than I thought, with the Kings, with the Oilers at minus 166, but they've beaten them twice before, and you know, you can make the case that this is a better Oilers team, especially since they've, you know, made the coaching change, got your guy out of Hartford. McDavid is not going to want to lose first round. I think they're going to come back a little possessed. And for the Kings, they really gutted a lot of their roster to get Pierre-Luc Dubois. So if he doesn't step up, I don't know how this is a close series. So Dubois, this is going to be on him to be that elite goal scorer.
Yeah, but like, is he that, you know?
We'll see. I mean, this is the first real, like, he played on that Columbus team, and at the time he wasn't really, you know, what he is now, and they had a lot of, you know, they had Panarin, they had other big names, so he'll have to step up. I do want to also say, though, Quinton Byfield again, you know, 20 goals this year was a pretty big step in the right direction. But last year, the series was close because the Kings had four lines that could go. They didn't have that elite goal scorer. They made the decision to, okay, we're gonna try to get some more goal scoring, and we'll see. I mean, this is where it all comes down to.
Yeah, there's no shot I'd pick L.A. over.
Not even a bad Oilers goaltending, though, because that's the one thing is, like, if the Oilers...
They're streaky, you know, though.
Yeah.
It's all season, like, how many games in a row did they win? Was like 11 or something?
I know. I think it was more than that.
They're a streaky team, and when they click. Yeah. And Skinner 16. Is no slouch. 16
yeah.
games?
Yeah.
Skinner is no slouch in that. You know, he's just streaky back there. And they have dudes that can score. It's not just McDavid. It's not just Dreisaitl. Yeah. Look at Hyman. How many goals did he have this year? Like 40, 50? Like,
I know.
They got
50 at like 30 for the first time. 30 plus is crazy. Also, Joe, they've lost to the Cup champs the last 2 years. So for everybody saying, oh, Oilers can't get it done, look who knocked them out of the playoffs the last 2 years, Colorado and Vegas.
I mean, look who were two of the best teams in the league last year.
I know.
Vegas the last couple of years. So
yeah, they're not exactly choking, and they've lost the teams that I think we'd say were better than them. So I expect them to win this one. I think if the Kings can steal one in Edmonton, make this a drawn-out series. For the Oilers, though, you know, part of it is staying healthy and not being beaten up, because last year the Kings kind of pushed to six, and then you get to Vegas, which was a different beast. But Vegas is on the other side this year. Vegas-Dallas, and I wanted to get into this because I know we're bouncing around to the other portion of the bracket, Joe, but Dallas is good, man, and that's another team that I don't think people from the outside really get. What they've done to rebuild their roster, it's like old Joe Pavelski and a bunch of young guys. But I am, and I know Vegas is, you know, the Cup champion, and they're coming back with Stone, and they're a tough team to play against. I just love how Dallas built their roster, and I think they're going to win this series, and maybe not as long as some people think.
If not this year, when for Dallas? Right. You know, we've been talking about them as a Cup contender for the last 3, maybe even 4 years, and they just haven't been able to get it done. Like, you know, is that just because Dallas a hockey town? No. It's hard to pick that. I mean, they came into Seattle last year, and that was a tight series. But like you said, their roster is solid. I think my favorite player on their team is Wyatt Johnson.
So good. And you know what? Because Robertson led the team in scoring with just 80 points, and you think, man, they don't have the top flight guys. If you watch this team, they are so well-rounded, and it's not, you know, it's high-scoring offense, but everybody play. And Wyatt Johnson, what, he's 20 years old?
Yeah.
You know, Hintz is another guy that stepped up. Like, they found it. And the guy, I'm going to have to look it up, the guy that they picked up midway through the year, he's been a beast too. As your Stankoven, that guy. He's only played 24 games. He's got 14 points. He stepped right in. He's a Western junior guy, but 21 years old. Yep. I mean, they are just...
Yeah. They're getting production out of everybody. Yeah. Out of all everybody they put out there, all their young guys. And like you said, they don't necessarily have, like, one superstar player. We kind of looked at Robertson as if he was going to be that guy. Wasn't as good this year as last year. His production tapers off a little bit. Everybody else's production kind of tapers up a little bit. So, you know, they're just a solid team. And Johnson on the third line is just ridiculous. Their blue line is so good out in front of Edinger.
That's another one. I mean, that's the thing too. How good is he when he's on?
He's up there with Helly, you know, he's up there with Helga, viewed as one of the top goalies in the league. You know, it's if not this year, when?
I also think that the Stanley Cup hangover is real, and it's not so much a hangover, just how beat down you are when you go that far, win or lose. I know Florida lost, and we're liking them, but they added a lot of reinforcements. They had some cap flexibility that Vegas doesn't have.
The thing about Dallas is they do most things well, and their defense is probably the best overall in all of the playoffs. It's just elite. You know, they got a bunch of guys, say four dudes that can play 20 plus minutes a night and not think twice about it, which is probably what's going to happen. They got Heskin and Lindell. Harley had an amazing season, and Tanev. I mean, that's going to be tough to get through, especially when you have Edinger playing. I think he had like a 930, 940 save percentage down the stretch. Yeah, 940 down the stretch. He was just a beast. So you're getting the scoring, you're getting the good defense, you're getting the good goaltending. They're coming in as the one seed, you know, like they're going to be tough to beat, Dallas.
Yeah, they're priced to win this series at minus 142, so a solid favorite, but not overwhelming. One even series on the books, and that's Colorado-Winnipeg. I can't wait for this one. This might be the one where the hockey nerds like us are just like, or the junkies are just like, this is the best series, because I think it's going to be mean and physical, and I think it's going to be elite. Yeah. And I think part of that is Colorado, we all know how good they are, and we just talked about McKinnon and Rantanen's a stud, and Makar is a generational talent on top of everything else. But Winnipeg is good. And if you watch them play, and if you watch how they're built, and if you watch how they just handle business, and as you said, just won for like the entire month of April, there's a reason why this is an evenly priced series. Winnipeg has the home advantage and is a true coin flip of a series in my mind.
I'm with you. I'm so with you. I know we look at Colorado as a team that's been there. They get it done in the playoffs. They've proven that they can make it happen. And they got, you know, two of the best players in all the league on the team, McKinnon, Carr. They're solid. But I just really like the way Winnipeg has played this year. And some of the acquisitions they made, you know, they may not have shown up crazy on the stat sheet, but getting Monahan to Foley, that really solidifies that second line for them. And they may not be a household name group, but like we talked about earlier, they're a solid two-line team. Like, their entire roster is, you know, second-liners, third-liners, but they play solid hockey. And they're fun to watch. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they make it through Colorado here, but it's definitely going to be an exciting series. I could definitely see this one going seven.
Yeah, if I was going to pick a seven-game series in the first, this would be the leading candidate in the clubhouse, but there are hopefully more than one. What Winnipeg does and how Connor stepped up and how Hellebuck between the pipes is just so solid. This is probably the team you could argue had the least of all the teams that eventually got here, maybe Washington the other side, but everyone was kind of writing them off and not sure what they were doing, and there was a lot of disarray, but yet here we are with Winnipeg here. And for Colorado, it's a chance to, you know, kind of get on the right foot. They were bitten by the Stanley Cup hangover last year. What's Mittelstadt going to be like in the playoffs? It's going to be tough, man. I like Josh Morrissey a lot on defense, too, so I think we're going to see a great series. Joe, before, and I guess the last series, too, Vancouver-Nashville. Does Vancouver, this is an interesting spot for them. Top 10 scorer in the league, JT Miller. Couldn't believe that happened this year, but Vancouver had just a remarkable run.
I will never in my life get over that trade, man. Ever in my life, I will never get over that trade. Trading JT Miller and Ryan McDonough for Nemesnikov, just, oh my God, just, I don't want to talk about it. But Vancouver is one of those teams where, you know, this is the first time they've been in the playoffs in a hot minute. So I know they're your darlings. They've been your darlings for the last however many years we've been talking about it. But it would be nice to see them get through. I don't think that they're as solid as they look on paper.
I mean, they're ahead of schedule is what we're saying, right? Like, Rick Tocchet did a great job, and they're building something, but winning the division, and that's where it could be tough. But Thatcher Demko, I mean, that's the story for me. If he steps up and plays well, the BC goalie by way of San Diego, I mean, watch out, because if they get that effort on the back end, they've proven offensively. And that's not really surprising, right? They accumulated all this. I mean, Quinn Hughes, obviously, in defense, but you got Pettersson who re-signed. You've had Besser and all these guys. Like, it's not that shocking.
Vancouver's not really a team they don't seem like a team that's going to overpower you. And I like that they went out and they made some moves, you know, getting Lindholm, who actually has been horrible since he's been on Vancouver.
yeah.
But they're not necessarily a team that's going to beat you up top. They're going to beat you with their third line guys, their fourth line guys, who are just a little bit better than what they're going to be going against. I know there's some dudes out there that, you know, like I said, with Winnipeg, not household names, kind of similar with Vancouver. Uh-huh. And their defense outside of Hughes is pretty suspect, but like you said, if Demko can kind of stand on his head and make it happen for them. But I'm not overlooking Nashville. No. You know what I'm saying? It might be one of those series where we're looking at the upset team. Can score. Yeah. They were hot coming down the stretch. we talked about Yossi being our one of our favorite defensemen in the league this year, paired up top with McDonough.
Your boy. And
they're just solid. They've just been solid throughout the season. I mean, you don't go into the playoffs with 99 points for no reason.
Yeah.
And looking that good. So I like their depth. I like their goaltending. Saros he didn't have the best year of his career this year. He was pretty up and down, kind of going down the stretch there. Not a couple rough games against some bad teams, but I really like Forsberg. I really like how he played this year. Yossi, great. O'Reilly, kind of a comeback year.
You never count Ryan O'Reilly out in the playoffs. That guy scores big goals. So
this might be, as sad as it is for me, this might be the upset game, because I mean, you know, being up here in the Pacific Northwest, I like when the teams around here do well, and seeing Vancouver do well would be great. But like you said, they're a team that's ahead of schedule, and they might be projected a little bit higher than how they actually will perform. And they weren't great in April and down the stretch here, March and April, but I don't know. It's one of those ones where I'm looking at Nashville and I'm just thinking, okay, one of these teams in the wild card is going to win a series, and the one that I feel eekiest about is this one.
Well, I think it's time to make our picks then, because we got to pick these first round series, and then I want to hear your cup teams as well. But how are we feeling about the first round? I'll go first, right? I think in the East, I'll say Rangers, Panthers, Bruins. I'm going to go Islanders. There's my upset. I'll take out the Hurricanes, so we get New York and you get New York in the second round. In the West, I'm gonna go Oilers, Stars. Man, I don't want to Oilers, Stars. I'll say. Yeah, I'm on Nashville. Also, I'm on Nashville, and I'm on. I know I was pumping up Winnipeg, but I'm staying on Colorado.
Yeah, they're the. They've got the playoff history.
Yeah. So I'll say Nashville's upset.
I think we're pretty on par. I'm going Florida in the East. I'm going Florida. I'm going Boston. You know, you're not going to come in the second year. Are they going to win? Are they going to lose the first round 2 years in a row after that embarrassment from last year? I don't see that happening. And I like their goaltending. And Toronto just seems like they're headed for another first round exit. I like the Rangers, and I'm sorry, but I can't go.
Islanders, no.
I'm going to stick Carolina there. I just think they're too powerful.
That'd be good. How much fun would a Rangers-Islanders series, though, be?
It would be. And that's the Islanders are always, always, always another one of your teams where you're like, hey, man, you know, you got to watch out for this team. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm there. I'm Florida, Boston. So all chalk in the East for me. So that's definitely not going to play out.
Okay. What's your cup final?
Well, let me go through the West.
Oh, yeah, you didn't pick the West. Yeah, my bad. What you got in the West?
I think you and me are pretty spot on in the West. I'm going to go Dallas. I'm going to go Colorado, Nashville, Edmonton.
Okay.
And then we'll go – all right, we'll go back to the East. We'll go Florida, and then we'll go Rangers.
Oh, you're going all the way through. Okay.
And then we'll go Dallas. And, man, am I going to do it? Am I going to say Nashville?
It happens. We saw Florida as the last team in, you know, goal but the final.
We're going Dallas, Nashville, Florida, New York. Those are the finals for me.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think the Rangers have a real chance, as you know, but the second round, I think it might, you know, if they get Carolina in the second round, how they match up, if they get the conference final versus Florida, those are some pretty good, pretty heavy series. Dallas, man, I feel like this could be a year for them. If not now, when? If we do get Dallas and Colorado playing each other, just insane, insane stuff. All right, Joe Crisali, this was fun talking NHL playoffs. Quickly, though, you think it's going to be a back-to-back for the Nuggets?
Man, that West is a gauntlet. But yes, it's going to be back-to-back. for the Nuggets.
I mean, not diving into the NBA because I haven't watched as much this year, but I will say that seeding is finally not really mattering as much because the books are pricing Denver as like a prohibitive favorite in the West, regardless of what the number is next to them, you know? I think there's an experience factor. I think the basketball side of things, the basketball junkies want to see Denver Boston. That would be the best final, probably from a skill and team perspective, but
yeah,
upsets happen.
It's an interesting one, but those are the two best teams in the NBA right now. Boston, Denver. The only thing that scares me, I will say I'm praying that the Timberwolves beat the Suns in the first round. Shout out to all my Suns fan friends. Because, you know, Phoenix always plays Denver well. Always plays them well in the regular season. Always plays them well in the playoffs. I won't say I'm scared if that's what the matchup is, but I know it's going to be tough. But Denver Lakers to start out, they're going to mop the floor with the Lakers. And then they get the next round, Minnesota, Phoenix. They're going to win that series. And who makes it through from there? Is it going to be Denver, OKC? Like OKC as a one getting in there for the Western Conference Finals? That would just be crazy. We talked about the Canucks with, they're kind of ahead of schedule in a rebuild type fashion. Look at OKC, man. Like they drafted a couple guys and boom, first rank. The East is interesting for me in NBA. I just don't know who gets through Boston. I really like the Knicks this year. They just seem like more of a fun team, but they're also the Knicks. So you think like, all right, when are they going to break these fans' hearts? Which kind of makes me nervous for the Rangers. But I don't see anybody getting through Boston there in the East. And the West is going to be Denver. People think it's more of a toss-up. It is a little bit more of a gauntlet, but like I said with when we were talking about teams playing to play certain teams, losing to play certain teams in the playoffs, you know, the Nuggets didn't do that. They just ended up losing. they went up against the Spurs. They were up 17. This was like to get the one seed, and they were up 17 in the fourth, and they lost. Wemby just went off. But, I'm happy with how that season has gone for them to this point, and I'm confident that they're going to get it done. You know, they got Jokic, they got Murray. They're getting some good scoring off the bench. Nuggets are going to be tough to beat, man.
I think so. I think it's going to be a fun playoffs, and we got hockey, we got basketball. Everything's coming up for this time of year. It truly is the best.
Football, regular season.
Can't wait. Yeah, check out who's kind of near the top of the American League. Got Yankees and Guardians. So,
yeah.
You know, hey, watch out.
Who had the Guardians?
Not me. Definitely not me. All right, man. Joe Crisali, always a pleasure. Thanks for previewing the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's going to be quite the run for the Cup. Thanks for coming on the Money Mitch Effect.
Yeah, for sure, man. Always.
Huge thanks to Joe Crisali. There is nothing better than the Stanley Cup playoffs in the world of sports, so I'm excited. First game's tomorrow. Cannot wait. Thank you, Joe Crisali. Now we go to MMA Fighting's Jose Youngs to talk UFC 300. Holloway winning the BMF title with that insanely impressive knockout with 1 second remaining over Justin Gaethje. Pereira defending his title again. More and more to like with the UFC, as well as looking ahead to some big fights. The boxing matchups, Haney Garcia this weekend, Usyk Fury on the way, and some WrestleMania talk as well. Let's talk to Jose Youngs now here on the Money Mitch Effect. All right, now with us to recap an interesting time, a wild time in the combat sports calendar, on the heels of one of the better fight cards we've seen, UFC 300. My guy from MMA Fighting, Jose Youngs, back again. Jose, this is great because not only do we have fights, we've got the playoffs starting in hockey and basketball, baseball going. A lot happened. Sorry about the Guardians beating your Red Sox, by the way, but in seriousness, welcome for coming on the show.
Anytime, man. This is a wasted year for the Red Sox. I know we started off hot, and everyone's like, oh, we're going to make the playoffs. I'm like, you know how bad our lineup is? Like, our pitching staff is okay, but you know how bad our team is right now? Like, they're getting, whenever they sell the team, I'm going to be so excited.
Yeah. We've already established how you have the anti-tribute that you pay in fantasy football every year with your team name. So No, I think it's worth pointing out because we all like this time of year, and fighting never stops, but you have a lot going on. For combat sports, I know your schedule's always hectic, but in the lead up to UFC 300 and what we've, you know, what we were expecting, I think there was a little trepidation because the card didn't have the big signature, you know, name brand fight, if you will, at the top of it, but they were always selling us on depth, the fact that there were so many good fights, and, you know, hindsight being 2020, it was right on the money, Jose, because this fight card, what it lacked for in star power, had depth, and then ultimately had some of the signature moments of the sports scene. But the depth really did win out in this case.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely did not have the star power like a Brock Lesnar or a George St. Pierre or Connor or even the original UFC 200 main event, which was John Jones and Daniel Cormier. It didn't have that, but if anyone remembers, like, UFC 100, it was obviously a good card, but it had some stinkers on there or some confusing matchups in hindsight. UFC 200 obviously started off pretty hot because it had like Gegard Mousasi and Thiago Santos and Jim Miller and Takanori Gomi and Joe Lozon and Diego Sanchez. And it had some good mix of young up-and-coming stars like Sage Northcutt and some established stars like Cain Velasquez. But to have, I think, 9 or 13 or whatever how many number it was, former and current champions on UFC 300 was pretty special.
Yeah.
So, it was. I think it's the most stacked card ever. I really do. In hindsight, UFC 160 was pretty electric because it had like Khabib and Robert Whittaker and Wonder Boy and Max Holloway on the prelims. But they were all new, like relatively new to the UFC. That then they became superstars. But in terms of what was on paper, what was delivered, I'm not calling it the greatest card ever in terms of excitement, but UFC 300 was certainly the most stacked card ever.
I mean, early prelims had Figueiredo, Garbrandt, and was the
first
prelims.
Fight of the night.
And that was so. You're talking about just an insane depth in prelim fights. The, you know, Yuri Prochazka, who is a scary man, but that fight is also like a second or third on in a lot of good cards too. So that just shows you what there is, and there was a lot, and a lot of it was good. I guess we can kind of start with the prelims and kind of work our way up because there's so much to get to on this card. But was there a performance, or Jose, an open-ended question, was there something that stood out to you, good or bad, about the prelims before we got to the main card?
The prelims. I mean, until the BMF fight, Yuri and Alexander Radzic was most certainly the fight of the night. Yuri Prochazka just absolutely disrespectful approach to Alexander Radzic's power, basically just walked forward with his hands down eating punches, was a little alarming. Being a Mexican man, Diego Lopez kind of cemented himself as an absolute superstar by knocking out Sadiq Youssef in the first round. The Moicano fight was weird because of the Jalen Turner walk-off that wasn't a walk-off. The Andrade Marina fight was okay. The Bobby Green obviously like beat the soul out of Jim Miller.
That was
Figueiredo choking out Cody was big, but I think the story of the prelims outside of Yuri is obviously the violent debut of Kayla Harrison to the UFC.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to get there eventually. Kayla Harrison's violent debut. I think a lot of us, and maybe you're in this camp, we were just wondering how the weight cut was worked because she's a very big fighter and she's coming down a lot, but there seemed to be no problems there, and there seemed to be no problems in the octagon once the fight started. I know Holly Holm's rounding third, and this might be it for her, but this was as advertised, right? You bring in a Kayla Harrison. You could say the women's fight game needs another star with Nunez out, and Harrison steps in, and I saw someone, Jose, that was exactly what they advertised. It was just a killer in there.
Kayla Harrison is going to be a UFC champion whenever they give her the title shot, and she's going to be the biggest star at 135 pounds, maybe all of women's MMA, because she can talk the talk. She certainly backs up the fight. She has the accolades. Her accolades are bigger than, like, Ronda was a bronze medalist.
Two golds. Judo. Yeah.
Kayla Harrison is a two-time Olympic gold medalist who beat the woman that beat Ronda in violent fashion, and it was her bantamweight debut because she used to fight at 155 pounds. At PFL, fought once at 145 and then successfully made 135. So she's never going to be able to be one of these hyperactive champions just because cutting weight is so extreme for her.
Yeah.
But if she gets a hold of that belt, I could see her fighting like twice a year and usually on really big pay-per-views like the MSGs, the International Fight Weeks, the end of the year cards, those Super Bowl weekend cards. I don't think she's ever going to be able to be like one of these Israel or Volkanovski champions where she fights four or five times. But basically line them up, and I cannot think of a single woman at 135 pounds that could beat Kayla Harrison, or I would favor. Like if Amanda Nunes came back, that would be tough. I would, just out of respect, oddsmakers probably going to give it to Amanda Nunes, but, ah, oh, man, Kayla Harrison was a monster, 135 pounds.
I know. That was very impressive. I think we thought she'd handle business. We were just judging how the performance was, and, you know, you pass the tests that are in front of you, and she did just that. I think, is it fair to say, and I don't want to criticize because a win's a win, but the only real, like, letdown that people had on the fight card was the Sterling-Calvin Cutter fight. I mean, that was the only one.
That was Aljamain's first UFC fight, or first UFC featherweight fight. Calvin Kattar is very, very extreme, is extremely talented. He was coming off that knee injury that happened, I think it was in the Arnold Allen fight, so like 18 months on the shelf, something like that. That's tough to come back from anyone. Even Aljamain Sterling himself said that if he had lost, he probably would have retired just because he's like, I wouldn't be able to do it anymore. So not the case. We still get more Aljamain Sterling, but it just looked like, and he kind of confirmed it, that he was just kind of scared going out there. And he's always scared. He's always one of the more realistic fighters. Like, when you talk to him, he's one of the few champions that's like, you know, I might lose. This is a hard sport to do. Anything can happen. Yeah. And he just sounded like, even at media day and before, just sounded like a guy that was just unsure of himself. And that was true to the at the end. He came out and confirmed it. But that's what champions are made out of, to fight through adversity.
Well, the last thing on the prelim fight I wanted to mention was, I don't know, were you around when that clip of Jiří the night before the fight, just standing by himself?
Not only was I around, I saw it happen.
And I bring it up too. I mean, it's cool to see athletes meditate before, but that is the guy that, it doesn't matter if you know who he is, you're not going to go near someone that looks like that doing that.
He is an odd, odd, scary human being. All the MMA media kind of, after work, we went out to get a beer at Beer House near the arena, and then we look out and there's Jiří doing like Tai Chi and yoga and harnessing the energy of the moon, and all these fans are like going up to him. I'm like, those fans they're gonna get up there and they're gonna see him doing his thing and they're gonna get scared, and that is exactly what happened. So there were a lot of fans there, but none of them want to get in his way.
Well, as we move along to the main card here, UFC 300, and there was a lot to get to, how would you assess, and do you think there should be a grade given, or is it just a win is a win for what Bo Nickel did? Because he wasn't obviously impressed with himself, but again, that guy has pretty high standards.
I mean, I would give it an A just because it was like Cody Brundage comes from a collegiate wrestling background too, obviously not anywhere near the level of Bo Nickel. So he presented problems that Bo Nickel had not faced before. Like, what will I do? Because usually when you get two wrestlers or two grapplers or two whatever, it kind of turns into a sloppy kickboxing match. Like when Matt Hughes fought BJ Penn and just turned into an all strike, or when Matt Hughes fought Josh Koscheck, two high level collegiate wrestlers, just turned into a kickboxing match. And that's what I was kind of expecting this one to be. But Bo Nickel's like, nah, I'm going to take you down and submit you. Cody Brundage is an extremely physically strong human being. He's lost to a lot of very high level guys and has beaten a lot of low level guys. I thought this was the perfect test for Bo Nickel, because a couple of his shot takedowns were stuffed. Cody Brundage just defended really well in that first round, especially when they were on the ground. Bo Nickel made it to the second round for the first time in his career. So I know he's critical on himself, but I think once you get into the UFC, every fight's going to be harder and harder and harder. So he's not going to be able to do these like 30-second finishes like he's done earlier in his career. So yeah, I'd say I give it an A, but I understand why he doesn't like it.
Right, and I think we've discussed this before, but there's something to be said about when you have that blue chip prospect, for lack of a better term. And I mean, Sean O'Malley's been the blueprint, right? Like, you bring him along at the right pace so that they will be in tip-top shape when that title fight opportunity comes. So I think it's good to have some seasoning here, because we all agree what this guy's potential is, and that's a belt. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I would even – he could honestly make 170 pounds. Like, he's not a big 185.
Those wrestler weight cuts, man. You know, he could do it.
I think eventually when he fights Hamza, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be big, big money.
Yeah, wow. I mean – Hamzat's like, I mean, it's like the guy that makes weight versus the guy that doesn't make weight, right?
Right. I mean, Hamzat hasn't missed weight at middleweight yet, and I say yet because you never know with that cat. And He gets to fight in Saudi 5 rounds against who I think, Robert Whittaker, who I think is the best middleweight in the world right now. And I would even include Israel in that group. If he gets through him, though, look out.
So it wouldn't be a fight card. It wouldn't be us on a podcast. We didn't have this discussion here. But how'd you score the next fight? Sorry, you can't, Oliveira. Did you think that the judges got it correct?
Yeah, I did. I didn't think Charles even came out and said that he thought that Charles thought Armin Sarukian had gone out from that Darce choke in the third round. Mm-hmm. Didn't end up being the case. Armin has always been one of these guys that I wouldn't call. I never thought he was going to be UFC champion, but I always thought he would fight for the belt, if that made sense. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, he made his debut against Islam Makhachev in Russia, and that was an awesome, awesome, awesome fight. And he's only gotten better from there. And then the Gamrot fight was his only other blemish in the UFC, because I believe he lost his first or second fight ever back in Russia or whatever. He himself said he didn't really prepare for that fight, and that was such a spectacular fight. A lot of people thought Armin won. I thought Gamrot won, and then he beat Benil Dariush, and he beat Demir Izmagulov, who are both extremely high-level fighters. Mm-hmm. But those are the two biggest names he had in his career. Demir,
yeah,
is like a decision machine, and I'm not saying that as a knock. Like, he routinely wins decision after decision after decision. Not the most exciting guy. Armin fought him to a decision, and then he knocked out Benil. But before that, like, Matt Frivola is good, and Davi Ramos is good, and Olivier Aubin-Mercier that fight in particular has aged very, very well. But none of those guys are Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson, the guys that Charles Oliveira is putting away. So I thought Charles was going to win. If this was 5 rounds, I think Charles would have won. But it was 3 rounds, and Armin did what he needed to do, survived a wicked guillotine in that first round, took him down, controlled the BJJ black belt, and pulled off the win. And he should be fighting for a title next, maybe in Madison Square Garden or Abu Dhabi.
So you think he's going to – okay, so you think when the dust settles, he's next up?
Next up is Dustin Poirier.
Right,
Dustin
that's Poirier what I mean.
Dustin is fighting Islam June 1st.
Okay.
Assuming Islam gets through that, I bet they try to do Islam and Armin as the main event in Abu Dhabi, which would make a lot of sense since they're so close to Russia. And then if Islam wins that, I bet he goes up to welterweight or fights Connor or someone, whoever else. Because outside of that, there's not a whole lot of – I mean, if Gaethje gets 1-2 more wins – he could fight for the belt. Max Holloway could pretty much do whatever he wants right now, but I'm sure we'll talk about that. Interesting times at lightweight.
Yeah, certainly is. And I would agree with you. I went back and looked. It was close. I could see an argument for Charles winning, which is why split decision made sense, because it was a very close, fascinating fight even within the rounds. But I think they got it right, and it was fun, and it just set the precedent for, you know, what happened next. I mean, the BMF belt and the BMF title fight, Jose, I don't really know that I've seen a fight like this, and everyone talks about the ending, which was just insane, but I want to start with just how good Max looks given how it was trending. Can you recall a situation like this where, you know, we thought we had seen the last act, and now this guy, and again, I know he's so young because he debuted so young, but somehow looks as good or better than ever? It's kind of hard given where he was trending after the couple Volk fights, and now Max looks just as good as he's ever looked.
Yeah, he's just this generation's Dustin Poirier at that point. Like, Dustin Poirier gets, you know, knocked out by Conor McGregor, goes up to lightweight, gets a couple wins over some decent guys, gets knocked out bad by Michael Johnson, and then just has to restart. And then all of a sudden, you know, beats Eddie Alvarez, beats Anthony Pettis, beats Max Holloway, beats Conor twice. So, yeah, this just reminds me of something like that. Like, he was like, he's only lost to the best of the best.
I mean, he looks really good at lightweight. So that's the other thing. Is like, I know he's the featherweight goat for what he's been able to do. But
I would still put Jose Aldo as the featherweight goat. And I think Max Holloway would agree.
Okay. Well, man, that would have been a fun one, right? We can't fantasy book this, and we can't bring – it's not wrestling. We can't bring him back and do a mania. Like, it would be fun to see how the fight would go.
I mean, Max beat Jose twice.
I know. I'm saying, in their prime.
If you count the WEC matches, title defenses and everything, which turned into the UFC title, I would still put Jose Aldo first. And I think
Most featherweights would agree. Are we doing, and I'm not disagreeing with you necessarily, I just want to know, are we saying legacy-wise, or are we saying, like, if they both fought in their prime, like, where do you, and is there a different answer to those two
questions? I mean, have we even reached Max Holloway's prime?
That's the big question.
Like, Volkanovski also beat Jose Aldo, and Jose Aldo is now a bantamweight, because Jose Aldo was always not the biggest featherweight, which is also made even more impressive, but if they were both 100% and good to go. I mean, I don't know if there's a human being below 155 that beats Max Holloway that fought at UFC 300.
I know. It's fun to think about, but I'm with you on the legacy. Don't want to disrespect Aldo, but what Max did, and just look, I know Gaethje's tough. He's as tough as anyone that fights, and that's saying something, but to point to the middle of the center when you're up in the fight, I think that's what was jarring about that, right, was that. And then saying
that might be the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
And then saying he'd do the same thing for me because he has a lot to risk. I know he wasn't really in danger, how he was still moving and in control, but it is still challenging one of the best vicious strikers to basically steal the fight from you in the last 5 seconds.
I mean, that's what that fight title is all about, right? Uh-huh. Like that's obviously, there's only been 3 BMF fights. The first fight ended prematurely because of that doctor's cut. The second one, Justin Gaethje decapitated Dustin Poirier, and then, I mean, it doesn't get much better than what Max Holloway did. I haven't really sat down and thought about it, but I won't argue if someone says that's the greatest highlight in the history of the UFC.
There's another one that came to mind, but I don't think you're going to like it.
What's that?
The Korean Zombie fight.
Which one?
The one where the dap and then knockout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that one's exciting. I mean, if you're talking about greatest
knockouts, I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
Anderson front kicking, Vitor's always big. Conor McGregor knocking out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds is big. Honestly, Israel knocking out Alex Pereira last May is one of the greatest things you'll ever see, considering that was his last shot.
The first one, too. I mean, Pereira knocking out. There's a lot. I can't think you're the encyclopedia with this, but. Isn't in the same realm, but when John Jones locked that, who did he lock the standing guillotine?
The cheetah?
Yeah, that was just a cool highlight, too.
Yeah, there's some stellar highlights in terms of knockouts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's up there. I mean, I don't think it's the greatest, but it's certainly top three. It is certainly top three. I mean, honestly, the Leon Edwards knockout over tomorrow, like the hail, like he was down.
Like
he was 1 minute away from losing, going, and that would have been his only shot at welterweight gold, led to headshot dead.
It is kind of, there's different categories for this, like knockout moment, shocking. Like if you're talking about the shocking ones, it's like Rousey losing to Holly Holm, the first Diaz Conor fight. When the aura kind of took a hit because Diaz wouldn't go away. Yeah, I mean, we could do this all day, but the point being that was up there.
I won't. 600K it's too for Max. Top three most exciting highlights in the history of mixed martial arts, not just the UFC.
Hey, 600K for Max. Quite a little Saturday for him.
Mm-hmm.
Getting both bonuses that were up. So props to him. I mean, and turnabout's fair play and how quick this sport moves, right? Gaethje was the BMF man, and he was looking at maybe the next title picture, and, you know, it turns pretty quickly, as you know.
I mean, all credit to Max Holloway. I mean, Max Holloway for the knockout, but even more credit to Justin Gaethje for risking his title shot against one of the greatest fighters that has ever lived.
That was a bad nose break too. Like, I'm glad they broke it down on the broadcast. There's good. There's not bad. There's not great nose breaks, and there's bad nose breaks.
Yeah, I mean, that first round when Max Holloway landed that spinning back kick to the face, that was the beginning of the end, because Justin Gaethje routinely starts. He's 100% go all the time, but he's one of those guys that as the fight goes on, the better he gets, like just the damage that he can dole out, that it's hard to come back from getting your nose shattered that early in a fight, because then you got poked in the eye twice. So basically to have your nose basically be a broken light bulb and then being half blind, I don't know anyone that's going to beat anyone, let alone Max Holloway. But once that nose broke, I didn't get cage side seats. I was in the back. But some media there said they could hear it. Like that spinning back, you just hear crunch, and then the fight just kept going.
Mm. Well, you know, it's looking like Holloway's going back for his featherweight goal. I thought it was great, too. These guys are trading Bible verses now online, so it's getting serious.
I mean, yeah, they're both God bless him, man. That's what MMA is all about.
Poirier is going to be fun. I really am excited for that fight. I know Max looks great at lightweight, but he wants what he lost. And, wow.
I mean, him versus Ilya is going to be massive.
I know. And that's why I'm saying, like, he looks so good at lightweight, he could stick around here and do damage, but that's the fight, man. That is such a fun one.
Ilya is a superstar, and I think Max is our... I mean, Max would fight Dustin, too, because he's 0-2 against him, but I think he really wants that Volk fight. Like, if because Volkanovski doesn't... Obviously, he wants to fight Ilya, but I think that little trilogy of those three right there is so exciting. If Ilya... If Max beats Ilya, then obviously Max already told us that, like, I want that fourth fight against Volkanovski. Mm. If Volkanovski beats Max, then the rematch between Volkanovski and Ilya is right there already. And then the only problem is you got guys like Movzar and Brian Ortega and possibly Sean O'Malley introducing himself to the division. Could become a little stagnant, but it's one of those rare occasions where if that scenario happens, it's not undeserving to anyone.
Well, moving along here with Jose Youngs from MMA Fighting, talking UFC 300 and some other combat sports topics. Weiwei does it again. A five-round fight. Mm-hmm. Went the distance and nearly choked out her opponent early. That was a weird one watching, you know, the survival there. But, you know, coming back, I mean, got knocked off the perch, regained the belt, and this run already going better. She is, look, just quickly on her, Jose, she's a very polished technical fighter that doesn't seem to have a lot of weaknesses once the door shuts.
I mean, there's a reason that Demetrius Johnson, who could be the most talented fighter, most perfectly well-rounded fighter that has ever lived, without question the most underappreciated fighter that has ever lived. Yeah. He's easily on that top. Not in terms of legacy, but in terms of talent, he's very clearly a top five MMA fighter ever. And he did an interview with us during UFC 300 fight week, and he said that the fighter that he sees himself the most in is Wei Li. Is just a perfect fighter, like hard hitting, technical, great ground game, great jiu-jitsu, good wrestling. It just does everything technically perfect with violence behind it. I think she got a couple boogie women coming for her that I would think, I don't know if she can beat, but I mean, good luck to any of the current top of the division taking that belt away from her, because she seems like the perfect fighter. And Yan Zhonan put up a fight. That was a tough fight.
Yeah.
Yan Zhonan is as tough as they come. And that sidekick was very clearly frustrating Wei Li. She just figured it out, and that's what champions do.
Well, the main event. I believe, what'd you call Pereira on Twitter, a demigod? Man, he gets the low blow, the inadvertent shot. He waves off Herb Dean, says, I don't need a break, and then just starches Jamahal Hill, who was scaring most of the division, if not everyone else. But Pereira does it again. A very, very violent, very scary champion. This guy, and his rise is one of the most improbable things in the history of sports, coming into UFC and just decimating and saying he might want to even go up to heavyweight. I can't heap enough praise on Alex Pereira and what he's able to do and how he always seems to, other than getting caught by Izzy, he just seems to finish the show.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he's going to go up to heavyweight anytime soon. Yeah. That would be insane. And there's a lot of good fights at light heavyweight anyway. Uh-huh. And I don't want anyone at heavyweight to take that fight, because there's other fights that need to happen at heavyweight. But Alex can do what Alex wants. I would like to see him fight someone that has any sort of ground game, if that makes sense. Because Jan is a good fighter, and Sean Strickland's not going to stand there and wrestle you. I'm Jan Blachowicz gassed out in Salt Lake City, but I want to see him fight someone like, Magomed Ankalaev, who is just an incredibly terrifying, who just is a super terrifying fighter. Not a lot of great wrestlers of light heavyweight, but I mean, good luck. If you put someone in there with Alex that just wants to stand and bang, that fight is never going to go good for the other person.
No, it's not. I look at what he does and how he closes the show, and I'm wondering, Jose, do you think it's, I mean, there's timing. There's a timing aspect to it, too. But is the punching power just that next level? Like, is he separating himself?
Did you see that video clip of they have that punching machine that measures your, I don't know the exact, measurement.
Yeah.
But Francis Ngannou set the world record, the hardest recorded punch in the history of the world, to the point where I think he did 120,000 or 150,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. 150,000, whatever the unit number is. And then Tom Aspinall is punching the same machine and is only getting up to 80,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Alex Pereira goes in there and just hits it all casually, and he hits 190,000. So the dude is hitting harder than Francis Ngannou. So good luck surviving that. If you rewatch that fight, he didn't even land clean. he just like it was a glancing blow, and Jamal Hill got turned off. So yeah, if I'm the light heavyweight division, I am signing up for every jiu-jitsu and wrestling class imaginable, because no one is gonna beat that dude in a stand-up fight.
No, and you talk about looking better, not having to drain himself physically. I mean, this weight class fits him like a glove. How it's just improbable.
I honestly still think if he went back down to middleweight, he can win that belt too. It's just it would take time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what's going to be fascinating, because I wanted to finish up the UFC talk about the next fights that are announced, maybe not officially announced, but you mentioned Machaykev Poirier at 302. You know, and that middleweight belt too looks like, you know, we're going to see Izzy and Duplessis again. So, you know, there's some stuff shaking out. And I mentioned, you know, the Poirier fight, because the co-main on that fight is Costa and Strickland. So middleweights, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, there's definitely some fights in that division. We'll see what Izzy's future is. But I've been growing to appreciate that division and the fights that can be made.
It was a real bad division for a real long time. Mm-hmm. But that's how every division goes through its, you know, lulls. Every division except
heavyweight. Well, heavyweight's going through a lull.
So is light heavyweight and heavyweight, honestly.
Yeah.
If Alex beats Ankalaev and Jiří, like, there's really not a lot of exciting fresh matchups for him at light heavyweight. Then he can go up to heavyweight if he wants. But middleweight is finally electric again. It has a lot of, like, the problem is, like, people ranked like 13 to 25 are all basically the same fighter. There's not a lot of variance there. There's like, oh, Brad Tavares, oh, Roman Khabibov, Jack Hermanson, Chris Curtis, like all these guys could be any of the other guys on any given day. So, but they have a DDP. I don't even think DDP is the best middleweight in the world.
No.
Think he, you know, Sean Strickland got headbutt and cut his eye clean open. I don't know if he beats Strickland again. I don't know if he beats Israel. I don't know if he beats a healthy Robert Whittaker. But he got the belt. I think we're going to get that sometime this summer, early next year. Or later this year, I should say. I'm excited for that fight. If they do the Izzy route, because Israel's not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
He is not even remotely close to being healthy. If Hamzat wins, or Paulo Costa wins, or Strickland wins, any of these middleweights coming up, then I think that fight would also make sense.
Well, I got to ask you, thoughts on they finally made a date for Conor and Chandler? 170.
Dude. I'll believe it when that fight.
I knew you were going to say that.
Octagon. When they're in the octagon, then I'll be excited.
That was my first thought. My second thought was, I wonder how much weight Conor's actually going to have to cut to get to 170.
Not as much as you think.
Okay,
he's no longer filming Roadhouse, so he's not as big.
He was huge in that movie.
Yeah,
I was like, what weight class would that be? But you know what? It has been a long time. Chandler hasn't fought. Conor really hasn't fought. I'd like to see it. But, yeah, you know, we're on the same wavelength, because there's a lot that can happen between now and then. And we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's much talked about, so it's going to have to be something to discuss. So, Jose Youngs, before I let you go, got to talk about boxing. You know, you've been really branching out. I know you're a New Yorker now, and with that comes, you know, some other responsibilities. But Haney Garcia coming up in a couple of days, and you've been on location at the pressers and – the open workouts today as we record this. What do you think about this big fight coming up in the boxing ring?
I mean, I'm honestly floored that it's happening, because if anyone has been following Ryan Garcia's social media or not, I mean, good luck following it. If anyone knows, if you followed Ryan Garcia for one day and you just look at all the tweets that he puts out, like, you're going to be like, how is this man allowed to take a professional match? Good on him for making it. He's very young, he's very exciting, and he's very popular. Of everyone in like that weight class, like that kind of cluster of fighters at the top, like Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, Teofimo Lopez, Lomachenko, George Kambosos.
Shakur's in there, I think, too.
Who?
I like Shakur Stevenson. I know he's a little
Shakur older. Stevenson, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Like, out of all those guys, everyone I listed, I think Ryan Garcia is the worst. And I don't mean worst in that he's bad. Just all those other guys are like generational talents that will be like Devin Haney beat Lomachenko, but I thought Lomachenko beat Devin Haney.
That's where I'm at.
George Kambosos has beat Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez beat Lomachenko. I don't think Ryan Garcia beats any of them. But if you're talking about who's going to have the most money or who's going to sell the most pay-per-views, it's Ryan Garcia. So he is a very good prize fighter who is also very good at boxing. I just don't think he's the best in that weight class. I think Devin Haney should just walk through him.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Davis, Gervonta Davis. I know their punching power is a little different, but we saw what happened. Garcia's only professional loss, and it wasn't really like that shocking, I would say. So I think that's kind of more of it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Garcia can make it happen. I thought Lomachenko, as you did, won that fight against Haney, but you know, there's a lot of good fights here, and there's a lot of opportunities for these guys. I mean, that's super lightweight. Like welterweight division has a lot of guys. Lopez would be the one. I mean, we talk about Teofimo Lopez, a lot of talent there. I think he's better than Garcia, but he'd be one where I don't know what the headspace is going to be. So if anyone gets, because that Kambosos fight, he was like 10-12-1 favorite and he loses that fight.
Well, I mean, yeah, it really does depend on which, it depends on which Teofimo Lopez shows up, and it depends on if his dad is in the corner. Cause if his dad is in the corner, then who knows with that man. Yeah, I don't know. I like Teofimo Lopez. I don't know Teofimo Lopez personally. I really like his fighting style. I just hope he gets back. I just hope he gets his head on right, man, because that was a scary situation. I'm just glad he's still around.
It was. Stevenson and Davis and these guys and Haney. I mean, I would like to see some matchup. It's like the Crawford-Spence thing, you know. I think it did that fight, and we'll see what happens there, but that fight happening was good. It was good to have it while they were still relatively in their prime. So hopefully we can get some more crossovers there. Especially Canelo. I mean, look, are we Canelo Benavidez? Like,
no, it's never gonna happen. I've been saying that forever.
I gotta be
when it does happen,
though.
It'll be too late, too soon, and Benavidez is only gonna get better. Canelo blew it, and he should have fought Benavidez like 4 years ago, because now the Benavidez stand across from him would absolutely eat
That's
him.
A difference
I love Canelo.
Floyd.
He's my favorite boxer right now. One of my favorite boxers of all time. I just think Benavidez is operating on an entire different realm of existence right now. He is so good. And if they fought in, they'll never fight in Mexico, but if they fight in like LA, Dallas, or Vegas, if they fought in Vegas, Mexican Independence Day, the whole country of Mexico would show up.
What's the crowd like for that one? What's the crowd like for that one? Support, what do you think?
Oh, they would start.
Everybody?
I think it would be pretty pro Benavidez, honestly.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because we love Canelo, but Benavidez has been now they don't like people that duck. That makes sense? And I'm not saying, I don't like using that word.
Right. That's the accusation
being
thrown.
Strategic,
that's the accusation being thrown at Canelo. My counter question to that would just be, one of those fighters still maintains a primary residence in Mexico.
Yes.
So
Benavidez, I think it would be pretty. Canelo can walk on water in Mexico. The only one that is more revered than him is Chavez Sr., I would say, but Benavidez is just still fights like a Mexican. Yeah. I'll say that.
Not Chavez Jr.
No, that dude is a clown. I'll say that on record. I know I'm supposed to be unbiased, professional journalist. But Chavez Jr. is an absolute clown.
Yeah. He's the guy that lost boxing matches to MMA fighters. All right, so then we have, Fury Usyk. We got a date. Usyk fight against Fury in a month.
Maybe. It's been booked before.
It has been booked before.
And then Fury got cut in his face because he's a dummy.
We're not going conspiracy theory on that one? We're not going to go conspiracy theory on that one?
No.
Okay,
no.
All right.
If you saw Fury, like in camp, that dude lost so much weight. Mm-hmm. That dude was actually everything he did wrong in camp for Ngannou, he was doing the opposite for Usyk. That man is taking that fight.
But
seriously.
If the cut's really bad, which I believe it is too, that's not good for going into a fight. Because I mean, I saw the story on it. Like it could reopen a little quicker if it's that bad, you know, and it's not healed.
That was the same cut from I don't remember who.
Oh,
it
the
was
fight
against.
Before one of the fight before one of the Wilder fights.
It was the fight
It
was the fight. Who was it?
I know because he barely survived, and that was a little controversial because he was winning, but they're like, hey, you know, in another setting, they might stop this fight.
I think it was Otto Wallen, whatever his name is. Yeah. I don't think it was Tom Schwartz, but yeah, it was after the draw. And then I think after the Otto fight, then he beat Wilder twice. And then Dillian White. Yeah, I think it was Wallen. But yeah, it's the same cut. It's the exact same cut.
Yeah, that's That's unfortunate, obviously. But look, I'm looking forward to that fight because it's so fascinating on a lot of levels. One being the Fury, like what he has left in the tank, given all the miles, the size difference, everything, how much I think Usyk is a great fighter. It's going to be fun, man. I really am excited to see where this goes. But no, and boxing's fun too. This is the combat sports sweet zone, I think.
At least people are fighting each other now. The problem is I wish they were fighting each other in America or Europe or Australia. And I'm not saying that because I dislike Saudi Arabia, the country. It's just fans, the interest level when it's in kind of a dead crowd. Because Saudi Arabia, they don't care about ticket sales. They don't care about pay-per-view sales. They just want the spectacle. So the crowd is just like non-existent. I just wish it was in a better – I wish it was in a crowd that likes boxing.
I know. It's a tough one. They paid the rights for it, so they get the right to put it on their home soil. But, yeah, I agree with you there. Last thing, Jose, got to mention wrestling, too. It wouldn't be a complete show without it. Did you have any just reactions to Mania, especially that main event on Sunday night?
I didn't get to watch the main event on Sunday live because I had some family stuff I had to go to. But I obviously have since rewatched it. And is that the greatest main event in WrestleMania? Probably. Probably. I watched, I mean, even the first night was pretty electric, too. I mean, well, that was the longest match ever, right? The only longer main event was the Iron Man match, which was an hour. They got all the run-ins. And I thought The Undertaker coming out was the absolute coolest thing I've ever seen.
And that gong still gets you, right? Like, that's what I
realized. Because everyone thought it was, like, obviously if Stone Cold came out, that would have been awesome. But, like, everyone thought it would be Stone Cold. Everyone thought John Cena would come out. I don't know anyone that thought The Undertaker would come out. So I thought that was the absolute coolest thing I have ever seen at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I know.
So 10 out of 10. 5 stars in my book. Yeah. I know Meltzer gave me 4.5. Yeah,
I know.
Five out of five in my book.
I know the flip side of that is, you know, the fact being it was overbooked, whatever. Like, it was convoluted.
I don't think it was overbooked at all.
No. I don't either. I think Mania is when you do that. I mean, Mania is for, you know, 100%. The crowd is for that. I mean, it's people that, you know, want to watch the spectacle like that. And we'll see where it goes. We'll see, you know, big moment for Cody Rhodes getting the belt, finishing the story and all that, where he goes with his reign and going forward. But I thought it was phenomenal. And it bookended one of the all-time runs, maybe the all-time run by Roman Reigns. So, I thought it was good. I thought The Rock looked good in his return. I mean, they protected him a little bit, obviously, with the tag. But, yeah, he was in phenomenal shape for a man in his 50s. So, yeah, I have no complaints there. I'm just glad that, you know, that they didn't show. I mean, where are you at, Jose, with showing backstage altercations on television?
What? I thought that I was kind of, yeah, that was. Yeah. Oh,
that's a tough look.
I see you talking about the CM Punk. Yeah, what's the Jack Perry thing?
Yeah,
that was the stupidest decision.
It's just so dumb.
Pulling a Vince Russo at this point. Like you're giving, like, everything CM Punk said happened. It went exactly as he said it happened. Like, they just made themselves look like,
I mean,
absolute,
and I'm not
jabronis.
And I'm not the biggest, like, CM Punk. I like. I'm not like, there's some good, there's some bad. It's, you know. I'm not a huge fan. I bring that up, but, like, there is no benefit in what they did other than trying to, like you said, Vince Russo would get a ratings shot.
And they didn't even get that high of a rating. Like, the rating they got that night wasn't even their high this year.
Yeah.
I think their high this year was, I can't even remember. I don't even know, but it was so stupid. That is going to, like, so you know how Meltzer does the Wrestling Observer Awards at the end of the year. And one of the awards they give is worst promotional, like, tactic. Like, what's the worst thing a promotion has done? And, like, some of them are, like, the WWE, like, signing a deal with Saudi Arabia or using David Flair's death in a feud between Charlotte and Paige. Lowbrow stuff. Yeah. And it's always WWE. They've won, like, 15 years in a row because you could tell Vince McMahon is just old and terrible at his job. Like, I don't know what's worse than this. Like, it did nothing. It made them look so bad.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it wasn't good. You know, and again, it just drives more interest to the other side. But Mania was good. Shout out to, you know, all the work Seth Rollins did again and all those main events. And I also do. I'm a big fan of heel Drew McIntyre. He's someone that's 100%. Won me over with.
I hope he resigns. And Seth Rollins was the MVP of that entire event.
Yeah.
Like, two crazy matches. And, like, because people forget, like, he wrestled in the main event of night one and then kicked off night two.
Yeah.
So he had no, like Cody and everyone had all these, like, time.
And did a run, and did a run in at the end, too. Like, it was crazy.
Dyed his hair and did a run in. That was unbelievable. Yeah, he's the MVP. He should take, like, 6 months off, spend time with his wife and kid, heal up his knee, get healthy, come back, and go rematch Cody.
Yeah, wow. It's going to be fun, man. Wrestling's in an interesting, fun place, too. But it was good to see. Well, Jose Youngs, best of luck with all your coverage on UFC, on boxing, and everything else in combat sports. And maybe, you know, we'll see what the Celtics going to win the title, too. You can't have everything.
Oh, man. I think beating the Nuggets will be really tough. They're so good. Beating the Clippers would be tough, too. But, whoever comes out of the East is going to get cooked up by the West.
You think so?
Normally how it goes. But yeah. I think the best matchup would be Celtics, selfishly, and the Nuggets because they seem like complete teams. Yeah. The problem is Porzingis just Jokic owns Porzingis. I think it's going to be so tough to beat the Nuggets. It's probably going to be a rematch.
You didn't replay. You weren't the one that got Mizzou the way away shirt. That wasn't your connection, was it?
No. He's just a big I've never met Mizzou. Yeah, that's funny. I've never met him. I've met all the other coaches, but yeah, I don't know where he got that, but that was good to see.
Nice. Well, Jose, this was a pleasure. Check out Jose Youngs at MMAfighting.com. And thanks again for always coming on the Money Mitch Effect.
You got it, man. Anytime. As long as I'm around, I'll always be on Money Mitch.
Awesome. Appreciate it. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to both guests, Joe Crisale and Jose Youngs. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. And a reminder that you can find this episode and every episode of The Money Mitch Effect on all your podcast platforms, SoundCloud, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Check out The Money Mitch Effect. Leave a rating, a review, subscribe. Really support the podcast. I appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MoneyMitchM21 and check out The Money Mitch Effect Facebook page for exclusive content too. We're back next week. More hockey, some basketball. There's always stuff in the world of fighting and tennis. And of course, the NFL draft next week. Going to be a big week, big month in the sports calendar. I cannot wait to discuss it all with you. For Joe Crisale and Jose Youngs, my name is Mitch Michaels. This was The Money Mitch Effect. Thank you for listening and keep enjoying sports.